Welcome to the Legal Nurse Podcast, where you'll get tips to expand your legal nurse consulting skills. Every week, you'll hear from experts from within and outside the legal nurse consulting business. They'll share their knowledge to help you grow. Your show is moderated by Pat Iyer, a legal nurse consultant with over 30 years' experience. So join our community, sit back, relax, and get ready to learn. Here's your host, Pat Iyer.
Hi, this is Pat Iyer, and welcome to Legal Nurse Podcast. Today, I'm going to be speaking with Melissa Hall, who is a woman who specializes in teaching therapists how to connect with their paperwork so it's simpler and more meaningful. And you know, as legal nurse consultants, we are all focused on the paperwork and documentation in healthcare. Melissa has her doctorate in psychology, and she has really focused on helping therapists be proud of their documentation. You know, as legal nurse consultants, we also spend a lot of time interpreting and analyzing documentation in a case, looking at medical records, trying to put the pieces of the puzzle to perspective that would be useful for us in helping us to understand more about therapy records. She offers a free online private practice paperwork crash course on her website, and I'll ask her to give that link at the end. And she's providing therapists with tips on improving their documentation. Melissa, thank you for coming on the show. I'm so happy that you could spend some time with us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
You've gotten interested in helping therapists improve their documentation. How did this become an area of interest for you?
Yeah, I was actually working in a job as a quality improvement and compliance training expert at an agency, a nonprofit. And I started that job because I really wanted to take a break from therapy, and it was a very training-heavy position and seemed like something that I would enjoy doing. And through that job, I found that I really did like training a lot and creating little cheat sheets and helping therapists with their documentation. And I also found that it was a really big need because mental health professionals actually don't get a lot of training on documentation. So it really depends on, you know, their placement and their supervisors. And through working with people at that agency, I kept hearing over and over, you know, we never got any training on this. We never got any help with this. And then my friends in private practice started asking me questions because they knew the role I had at my job, and sort of went on from there. And I realized that it was probably something that people in private practice would also be interested in getting help with. And that's when I started my website and started creating trainings for therapists who didn't have that, you know, quality assurance expert that they could call up at their job.
It sounds like you found an area of need.
Yeah, very much so. And I mean, thankfully for me, there wasn't really any competition. There's very few people out there talking about this topic, and it, you know, it is pretty niche down. So that helped me to really be able to market it and work with other professionals, you know, collaborate with people who have similar expertise, like different people who work with technology or with electronic health records or billing for insurance and things like that.
Now, you mentioned before that you wanted to take a break from your practice area. What type of therapy were you delivering before you got involved with the nonprofit?
I actually did quite a few different things. So I was on a crisis response team for a while and really enjoyed that. I did a lot of assessment. So I did both learning disability assessment and career assessment. Also really enjoyed that and did some career counseling along with that. And then did basic therapy where it was very general, working with, you know, individuals, teens, no couples, but some families, but typically with kind of high need chronic mental illness. So I have done a lot of work with more severe and chronic mental illness throughout most of my therapy experience, and actually enjoyed all of that, but did find the work to be a little bit taxing. And although I really liked working with teens, I would tend to get a little too attached. So I actually found that even though it was an area of interest for me, it wasn't really the best fit for me to do for a job. It was better for me to do that kind of thing volunteering. So I wasn't taking that stuff home all the time.
I can understand what you mean. I've had two teenagers myself. I remember those years.
Yeah, it's fun, but you know, it can be a lot of work, especially dealing with families and all the things that, you know, can come into a therapy office.
Mm-hmm. And then when you got into the nonprofit and you started studying this area, did you find there were resources available to help therapists improve their documentation, or was this an area where you were compiling information from lots of different sources?
Yeah, so when I first started at that nonprofit, they already had created a lot of resources. So they had a pretty detailed manual, trainings. It was a very structured program. We also had flexibility to create our own trainings and did that quite a bit. But there was a lot of resources, and it was a pretty large agency. So there were, I think, maybe like 9 of us on the team that were all quality improvement training specialists. And we were able to also talk with one another and share resources and bounce ideas off of one another. So that was huge. When I moved into a management position at another agency, and there I found that a lot of other companies or, you know, nonprofit agencies didn't really have that many resources. So they might have had very few quality assurance people. Those quality assurance people often didn't have a lot of flexibility in terms of where to go to seek out help and how to work with other managers on the team and how to work with clinical directors. And I had a good experience being a manager at this other agency, but it really did open my eyes to see that most places didn't have as much help. And even though I sort of moved up and became a manager, I ended up doing a lot of things that I didn't even do at my last job. You know, sort of taking on bigger responsibilities and then also other tasks that I never even had to do before, just because there were so few resources there.
As legal nurse consultants, we spend a lot of time analyzing medical records, and sometimes that involves therapy records. Can you give us a sense of what are the areas of weakness that you have become aware of that involve therapy records?
Definitely. And I get a lot of questions from therapists and do a lot of consultations. So what are the biggest things that I see, and that is a pretty hidden problem, is that therapists very often will get behind in their paperwork. So they may not have notes from a few months of time. And sometimes it's a matter of, you know, they just need to catch up. Sometimes therapists are perpetually behind. And the big problem that creates is that writing notes from, you know, something that happened 2 months ago is totally different from writing a note that happened from something that happened today. So you'll see a lot of the quality does go down. And I've definitely noticed that. I mean, I can almost tell if someone has waited a few days or longer to write their note immediately, because it's pretty obvious. The language will be a lot more vague, and there won't be a lot of information. It'll be kind of hard to tell what's going on. And a lot of times the notes will start to sound the same. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so that's one of the biggest problems that occurs. And then beyond that, it's figuring out, the common struggle is figuring out, am I writing too much or too little? So that's one of the biggest questions I get from therapists. And I would say that one of their big weaknesses is that therapists will tend to lean towards the side of protecting confidentiality, almost to the detriment of the documentation. So when we talk about, are you writing too much or too little, they'll often write very little thinking, well, I want to protect my client's confidentiality. You know, if these notes, I often hear this, you know, if these notes ever, if a lawyer ever saw them or they were ever put out in court, I wouldn't want anyone to be able to tell, you know, what happened, or I wouldn't want certain information about my client to be shared. But on the flip side, you know, being someone who's objectively looking at those notes, they often just end up sounding confusing, or it's difficult to tell what was going on. So it ends up actually making the therapist look bad, usually, because then the therapist, especially if they're answering questions about something that happened months or years ago, and then they have these really poor notes that have very little information in them, they have a really hard time explaining what happened, remembering what happened, answering questions. They'll really easily get tripped up by, you know, a timeline because they don't have a clear picture, and it's really not written down.
Well, if you take the word therapy out of those sentences and substitute nursing notes, you're describing the same problem that affects clinical nurses when they are defendants in a lawsuit, and they've got poor notes that don't say a lot, and they're not individualized, and they don't have details of an incident, and they can't remember. So you're singing our song, Melissa. We understand this issue.
Yeah, it's really common. And I think what's so unfortunate is that a lot of therapists are actually purposefully doing that and thinking that it's beneficial. But usually when I am able to talk with people and kind of present some of those scenarios or ask them questions, they realize, actually, if I wrote a little bit more, it would be more helpful.
I'm sure that I have read those cryptic notes in looking at therapy records. Often, when legal nurse consultants are involved in cases with therapy records, it could be from the perspective of understanding the damages. You know, for example, the person who's involved in a car accident and then experiences post-traumatic stress disorder, or the rape victim who needs to go for counseling, or the person who loses his job. And this is a common scenario that I have seen a number of times. A man is in a car accident, ends up with injuries that prevent him from working. He needs to stay home. He's no longer the breadwinner. He loses his job. His income goes down. He can't afford therapy. He feels sorry for himself. He gains weight. He becomes short of breath. He feels even worse about himself. And all of that in the legal world impacts, from the plaintiff's perspective, it impacts the damages. So having details about the suffering that this man went through, for example, if we take his situation, is actually quite valuable for the plaintiff attorney. And the plaintiff attorney wants the therapist to document in detail those issues to understand the impact of the car accident.
Right. And really, it's, you know, from the therapist's perspective, I try to remind people that it's really not even up to them if it's beneficial or not, if it's something that happened, you know, and really the point of documentation is to keep a record of what transpired in any event. And if that's used to potentially harm or help someone later on, is really neither here nor there, right? It's just a matter of documenting what happened.
Mm-hmm. Before I continue with the show, I want to draw attention to a resource that relates to our topic. It's my book, How to Analyze Medical Records. This is a primer for legal nurse consultants. It is the third book in my series called Creating a Successful LNC Practice. It covers the pros and cons of electronic medical records, including how they introduce risk into the documentation of patient care. Use this book to discover tips and techniques for organizing paper and electronic medical records, which really are the backbone of our business. You will gain an understanding of how to screen a medical malpractice case for merit and discover clues for detecting tampering with medical records. The final two chapters focus on how to polish your work product to create your strongest professional appearance. You will gain critical insights on how to strengthen your ability to analyze medical records to gain more clients and earn more money. Order this book, How to Analyze Medical Records, at http://lnc.tips/creating-series and use the code LISTENED for a 25% discount on the price. That link is http://lnc.tips/creating-series. This is really my number one bestseller of all of the books that I sell. Now let's return to the show. And why do therapists get behind in their charting? What causes that problem?
You know, a lot of it is actually avoidance. Obviously, there's some basic time management strategies, and a lot of therapists struggle because they are working for themselves, and so they're managing a practice and, you know, maybe working part-time while they have a family and trying to answer phone calls and deal with billing. And especially if they deal with insurance, it can be kind of a hassle to follow up on problematic claims. And so paperwork's kind of the thing that often gets pushed back because it really, I mean, often it's nobody knows about it, right? So if you don't do your billing, then, you know, then the therapist will actually feel that. And if they didn't see clients, they would feel that. If they don't answer the phone call, they'll feel that. But if they don't write their notes, there's really nobody coming after them wanting these notes. So that one is often the last priority. Another reason it's often the last priority is that therapists really do have a lot of anxiety around paperwork because, like I said, they don't give very much training. And I've heard a lot of stories of therapists when they were in training where maybe a supervisor actually said to them, oh, well, that's not my job to teach you about your paperwork. You should have learned that in school. And then the supervisor doesn't provide any help. Or a supervisor maybe, you know, points out a couple of negative things about their documentation, but then never gives any other kind of feedback. And so a lot of therapists really have some negative experiences around it. And it becomes this really negative thing for them to do. So to sit down and do their notes has a lot of negative connotations. It feels uncomfortable and they feel stressed about it because even when they do sit down to write their notes, they don't feel confident that they're doing well. And some therapists will end up taking like up to 30 minutes just to write one note. And so then it becomes a task they're avoiding because they're dreading it.
And they probably haven't allowed for that 30 minutes in their schedule when they're booking patients.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I mean, practically a lot of therapists, you know, tend to see clients in the evening. And so if you stop seeing clients at 7 or 8 o'clock and then you just want to go home after having a full day. So a lot of people will then say, oh, I'll do my notes tomorrow. And then it doesn't happen and so on. So it's really easy for people to get backed up very quickly.
What about emergency calls that a therapist may receive from a patient? I'm assuming that you've had experience with that. I certainly know about that from some of the issues that can come up if somebody's feeling suicidal or depressed or panicky. Do those types of communications get into the medical record?
They definitely should. So
I listened to the way you answered that, Melissa. That was definitely not. They always get in the records.
No, yeah, they definitely should. Usually, therapists are pretty up on something that would be like suicidal ideation. You know, something that would be significant in that way, and they would document that. I find that it's more those kind of middle of the ground, like gray areas where they'll be a little bit poor about their documentation. So things like self-harm, or maybe they'll be really good about documenting when the client called them in, you know, the middle of the night feeling suicidal, but then they may not be good about documenting 2 weeks later when that should still be something that they're following up on. So they're not sort of continuing that story about what happened, because, you know, these big things that happen, that's one incident, but then you're continuing to treat this person potentially for months afterwards. So there should be a lot of follow-up around that. And then I would say other things that I often see missed are things like clients who fall off, maybe don't show up one session and then just stop coming. I mean, that could potentially be a concern, but therapists will often just not document when people no-show or when clients call to reschedule something, or when clients leave voicemails for them. So, you know, I recommend that people document all of those things.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about the way that you see therapy records headed. Are they predominantly handwritten? Are they predominantly done through electronic medical record systems? You know, what is the pattern or the trend that you're aware of?
Right now, it seems to be about half and half. So about half of the therapists I talk with are still using paper, you know, paper files, filing cabinets and all of that. And the other half are using various electronic health records. So there have been quite a few practice management systems, that have popped up recently, specifically for therapists, which has been really helpful because a lot of the EMRs that were created for hospitals or medical doctors have a lot of things that don't really apply to therapists.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they can really easily get overwhelmed. And it's just, you know, paying for a lot of things they're not using. So it's been great to see these other practice management systems pop up. And I do see a lot of therapists using them, especially to help with billing. So as insurance becomes a bigger thing, you know, it's so much easier to click a button and be able to print out a super bill, for example, for a client than to have to sit there and fill out the whole thing. Or to bill credit cards, you know, to keep a credit card on file inside an EHR. And then I usually say EHR because that's the term we usually use. But I know in the medical field, it's more EMR. But, you know, for help with credit card processing and stuff like that, I see that probably in the next 10 to 15 years becoming much more common in the therapy world. Because a lot of it relates to client convenience. So it's much more convenient for clients to be able to log into something and adjust their schedule or upload a credit card than to have to think about, you know, bringing a check in nowadays, because most people don't carry checks or cash on them, or, you know, to have to make a phone call to adjust something. So many people are used to being able to text or go online. So I think that'll probably shift quite significantly in the next 10 years or so.
Are the EHRs that you're familiar with designed to allow for free text entries?
Yeah, most of them are. They vary a lot. And I actually did a blog post about this and talked with a bunch of the EHRs to try and see, you know, what are the different options they have for notes. So some of them allow therapists to create their own templates, which is nice. So they can create their own prompts. I recommend a few different types of templates for therapists. So SOAP is one of the templates that I'll recommend they try out. I know that one's a lot more common in the medical field. And so that's the most common thing. And that's mostly what the EHRs have like pre-uploaded inside their systems, or templates like that that use a free text field but just have basic prompts. A few of them also use checkboxes, and usually it's a combination of checkboxes and free text fields. I don't usually like those because a lot of the checkboxes like just don't really match what that therapist needs. And I find that when therapists tend to use checkboxes, it's not really saying much about what happened. So being someone who's an objective person reading the note later, if I just read off a bunch of things that are checked off, I don't really have an understanding of what happened in that session. It's really vague. It doesn't really tell me that much. But I like that most of the EHRs do, at the very least, they will have a combination of both, or they'll tend to lean more towards just having free text fields.
I was thinking about checkboxes as you were talking, and was thinking how hard it would be to come up with those, because the issues can vary so widely. You know, would you have a little box that would be checked off that would say depressed, for example, but maybe depression is the whole focus of that visit, and just having a box wouldn't give you enough information.
Right. And I mean, depression is something that can look so different in different people. So that's why I usually recommend not to use them, because of exactly what you're saying. They'll check that off, and then I have no idea what that looked like for this person. And that might look totally different for the next client they see.
Are you encountering systems that include voice dictation as a way to create notes?
The only one I know that uses it specifically is an EHR called Simple Practice, and they allow people to use dictation on their phone. So if they want to write notes on their phone, they have an app. Mm-hmm. Other than that, I don't know of specific systems, but I do know of therapists who use like Dragon Naturally Speaking, and there's another one, I can't remember the name right now, but you know, systems that you can just download to your computer, and then they're able to use it for anything that they would normally type.
I have a vivid memory of being asked to transcribe therapy notes involving a custody battle, and the therapist was talking to the child who was the object of the battle. And the therapist had about the worst handwriting I think I've ever seen.
Yeah.
The attorney for one of the parents, and I still am not sure which parent wanted this done, but one of the parents wanted these medical records transcribed. And I subcontracted that job to another legal nurse consultant. And then when I saw what he brought me, I went back over the medical record and tried to fill in more words. And we got probably 50% of the words we could decipher. And the family member, this parent, kept saying, go on, do more pages, do more pages. I think we collected probably about 30 hours of time. And I felt like what we produced wasn't enough. It was, you know, we weren't even sure if we were accurately reading this. Although after you read somebody's bad handwriting for a while, you begin to find places where you can make it make more sense, because you're beginning to see the same phrases over and over again. And
yeah,
I think about that.
30 hours.
Yeah, well, it was incredible. And I kept waiting for the attorney to say, stop. You know, you're not producing anything of value. That's enough. But we'd run through 10 hours and we'd ask for another retainer and we'd get another retainer. And that went on for 30 hours. But as you're talking about voice dictation, I was thinking how much easier it would have been if the therapist who had really bad handwriting had just said, let me dictate these notes. And then everybody would have been clear about what was in them.
Oh, yeah. And I definitely recommend that to people. I mean, I've had the same thing happen where one of the agencies I was working at, we had an investigation, you know, to see, it was an older case, but it was to see about whether or not staff had, you know, been acting appropriately with a group of clients, and whether or not they had, you know, responded to different complaints about things. And I remember that the handwriting was so, so poor, and there were all these handwritten notes, and it was so difficult, you know, poring over these notes, trying to get the answers that we wanted, just because of the handwriting. And it's, I mean, nowadays it's so silly to have something like that hinder anyone, because typing for most people is faster, and then you don't have to worry about any of those issues. So I do recommend that to people when they ask me about, you know, keeping paper charts. That's one of the things I'll say, you know, well, do you have really good handwriting? and is it easy for you to keep, you know, the paper all organized, then, you know, go for it if it's working for you. But if you don't, that then you should strongly consider dictating or typing.
And my next to the last question for you, Melissa, is, are there any concepts that legal nurse consultants should be aware of when they read therapy notes?
Yeah, I think one of the big things is to look for, I always look at the story. So when I'm looking at a chart and reading the notes kind of chronologically from front, you know, from the beginning to the end of the story, I want to look for any gaps in the story. And are there things that are missing, like those follow-up? That's really common where a therapist will have a note that says, you know, next session is going to be October 1st. And then October 1st, there's no note. And there's no explanation of what happened. So I think it's really important to identify those gaps and make sure the therapists are following up with things. Because like I mentioned in that example of, you know, if a client called you up suicidal, or if a client recently got back from the psychiatric hospital, for example, there should be some consistent follow-up about those issues. And often therapists will kind of drop the ball on that, and they'll just kind of jump back in, even though they might be addressing that in the session, they're not writing about it in their notes. So those are some big things to look for. And then I think the other big thing is, you know, asking yourself, can you identify why this person is in therapy and how they're benefiting from therapy? Those are two things that really should be clear from a note, you know, from a group of notes, at least over time, for any therapist in any situation. That should be easy to read. I know it's not always, but that would be what I would be looking for in any case, you know, and that's what I'd look for and what I recommend to people.
Those are great points. I know I have seen the kinds of gaps that you're talking about, trying to track the progress of a problem, and then all of a sudden there's a big hole in the notes and it's not possible to figure out if the patient and the therapist continued to discuss that issue or it just got pushed to the side.
Yeah, yeah.
If our listeners would like to find out more about what you offer and about your services, how can they reach you?
Sure, they're welcome to go to my website, qaprep.com. And I have a ton of resources there. If you want to see examples of treatment plans and notes and things like that, I have a free crash course that people can sign up for on the website. And so that way you can kind of see some examples and see some different ideas for writing notes. It's like I go through four different note writing templates within that crash course. So that might be helpful for some people to check out and see what are the different options that therapists have.
I appreciate you shedding some light on the subject of therapy notes, and I appreciate the time that you spent with us today.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you so much for having me.
And this has been Pat Iyer talking with Melissa Hall about therapy notes. A lot of the points that Melissa has shared with us are so important for us to understand as legal nurse consultants. We know the holes in documentation affect a wide variety of healthcare providers, and it's encouraging to know that Melissa is out there helping therapists strengthen their documentation so that they can more completely describe what they're doing with their clients. Thank you to you, the listener, for being part of this show. Please subscribe to it. We have lots of episodes coming up, and we love sharing ideas that will help you in your legal nurse consulting practice. And if there's a topic that you would like to have covered, please send me an email at patiyer@legalnursebusiness.com. If you are interested in moving your business forward and getting one-on-one help with my mentorship coaching program specifically designed for LNCs, please look at lncacademy.com and let's have a phone call to talk about how I can help you move forward in your business. Get the details at lncacademy.com.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Check out Pat Iyer's resources for legal nurse consultants on legalnursebusiness.com. Pat coaches legal nurse consultants so they make more money, get more clients, and avoid expensive mistakes. Check out her coaching program at lncacademy.com. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave a review on iTunes. We always are interested in your ideas for new topics. Please leave a comment on legalnursepodcasts.com. Join our community and get notified of each new episode and receive the transcript of today's program. Complete the request form on legalnursepodcasts.com. We appreciate you and your interest.